Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9.
This is Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Have your say. 1300 Joy 949.
Gay
News
Week.
Gay News Week on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome to Gay News Week on Joy 94.9 with Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt.
Here at Gay News Week, we aim to cover topics that have been in the news over the past week and how they impact you, us and our community.
On tonight's show, we're going to spend quite a bit of time talking about Julia Gillard's speech, what led her to it yesterday and the response that has come out of that, particularly with worldwide media and a lot of sentiment that's around it. We're going to talk about Alan Jones a little bit because that's been in the news this week and it really can't get away from it. And we're going to do a quick trip around the world on our list of other things. We're going to also have our icon of the week and we'll get to that nearish the end. Brian Shanahan, who is running for Lord Mayor in the City of Melbourne election shortly, is going to come in and spend the last few minutes with us, having a chat about his policies and where he's coming from for that election.
But if at any time you want to get in contact, please do so.
You're listening to the Gay Newsweek podcast with Sammy, Jeffrey and Matt. Get in touch. Email gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links to our social media pages.
But first, as you may have heard, it was a lively day in Canberra yesterday. The Prime Minister made a passionate speech in the House of Representatives opposing a motion put forward by the Leader of the Opposition, Tony Abbott, to throw out Speaker Peter Slipper. Well, the speech clearly made an impact because late yesterday afternoon, Peter Slipper made an announcement to the Parliament that he would be stepping down as Speaker with Deputy Anna Burke to take his spot.
And certainly we're going to have a listen to some of Julia's speech in a few segments tonight. We've got four clips out of it. And we're also going to hear a little bit from Tony Abbott. But just to set the scene and to get us going, let's go with Julia's opening comments.
The question is that the motion be agreed to. I call the Prime Minister.
Thank you very much, Deputy Speaker. And I rise to oppose the motion moved by the Leader of the Opposition. And in so doing, I say to the Leader of the Opposition, I will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. I will not. And the government will not be lectured about sexism and misogyny by this man. Not now, not ever. The Leader of the Opposition says that people who hold sexist views and who are misogynists are not appropriate for high office. Well, I hope the Leader of the Opposition has got a piece of paper and he is writing out his resignation. Because if he wants to know what misogyny looks like in modern Australia, he doesn't need a motion in the House of Representatives. He needs a mirror. That's what he needs.
Joy 94.9.
So that was Julia Gillard in Parliament yesterday, responding to a motion put by the opposition against the then Speaker, as he was.
As he was. Not anymore.
Not anymore. So that was Julia really getting emotional about misogyny and sexism and probably some issues about which she's been silent for a while or not spoken up as loudly as we thought she might. From my point of view, I thought it was a sterling performance and we're going to hear some more clips of her. And I really think this is the Julia Gillard that we used to see and we used to hear when she delivered speeches, when she was the opposition spokeswoman for health, when Tony Abbott was in fact the health minister under the previous Conservative government, and the person that was also opposing work choices under the previous government and as Minister for Education. So very strong performance.
Yeah, I've got to say, I have to admit that I don't remember that much of her previous work I'm a bit young, as we've established well and truly. But this is definitely the Julia that I would have loved to see for her whole time as Prime Minister. This is passionate about issues that are very important to society. And I would have loved to see this kind of thing a lot earlier rather than so late.
I think we've actually seen a little bit of a start of a turning of the tide with her lately. You know, recently with her supposedly going to be speaking at the ACL National Conference, then she actually stood up when the ACL, again, as they always do, is step over the line and make very unsavoury comments about our community in particular. She turned around and said, well, no, I'm sorry, I'm drawing a line in the sand. And I'm not going to attend the conference. And I think that's been a start of a turning of the tide that we've seen with her and her standing up a little bit lately.
I wonder if it's her toughening up a bit. I think one of the things that's happened and that a lot of people have commented on with her as Prime Minister is, whilst she's been working hard, and I don't think anyone's disputed that, some of the passion and some of the strength that probably got her to her level of political prominence in this country doesn't seem to have been there since she became Prime Minister. And so this is a step back in that direction. So I think that I'm really pleased to hear the old Julia as opposed to the new Julia, the sanitised Julia, the softer Julia, which didn't seem to have as much commitment on issues and didn't stand up for what at least we thought she believed in.
I tell you, we're going to have to start labelling versions of Julia. Julia version 0.1, 0.2, because I'm losing track of the old and the new. But I definitely think you've raised some very, very valid points. She's not doing that great in the polls, and the election is around the corner. It's next year, I believe, that the election will be coming up. And I think this is going to give her a great boost. I'll be really sticking to having my eyes stuck on the polls this week when they come out, or is it next week? I don't know. Because I want to see how this affects her approval rating, etc.
For her to turn around at the very start of her response, now this was a 15-minute response, which of course we will be later putting up on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. For her to come out at the start of this and talk about, you know, if you want to see misogyny, all you need to is a mirror. You know, I sat there and, you know, I could feel the pride swelling within my chest saying, this is the woman that I voted for originally to lead our country, a strong, powerful woman that is standing up against this behaviour.
And there's enough in this to go around, though, because when you talk about standing up for things, Tony Abbott has some other comments about that and points out that the Prime Minister has been a bit inconsistent in her view and that she, in his view at least, has picked up bits and pieces. And so there's some inconsistency to be going around. I think certainly that this was in response to an opposition motion putting a lack of support in the Speaker. The motion went down, as you would rightly expect, along party lines. And so it didn't get across the line. But it's brought us to a new style of Parliament. And I think that's for the best.
I certainly think it's definitely all about keeping the public interested and engaged in politics. And this is certainly very interesting and engaging. If you want to provide us with a little bit of feedback, please do so. We'd love to hear from you.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
Discussing the interesting involvement in Julia Gillard's speech yesterday in Question Time in the Australian Parliament, we've been listening to one of the clips already. We're about to listen to another very interesting part of her speech.
The Leader of the Opposition wants to be taken seriously. Apparently he's woken up after this track record and all of these statements. He's woken up and he's gone, oh dear, there's this thing called sexism. Oh my Lord, there's this thing called misogyny. Now who's one of them? Oh, the Speaker must be, because that suits my political purpose. Doesn't turn a hair about any of his past statements, doesn't walk into this Parliament and apologise to the women of Australia, doesn't walk into this Parliament and apologise to me for the things that have come out of his mouth, but now seeks to use this as a battering ram against someone else. Well, this kind of hypocrisy should not be tolerated, which is why this motion from the Leader of the Opposition should not be taken seriously.
Joy 94.9.
You could hear it in her voice, couldn't you? There was a bit of wavering, there was a bit of emotion. And if you want to see that emotion, she's actually quite theatrical with her body language and movements. And the responses to the people that are sitting behind her, and in fact the people sitting opposite her in the parliament, the faces and the body language are really worth taking a few minutes, if you've got an interest in politics, to look at the speech and look at the people inside the House of Representatives and the way they responded.
And certainly take a look at Mr Abbott's face during it. He knows he's in a little bit of trouble with this speech because he's making a few faces where he's not feeling too happy about himself.
I think the one thing that we can see is normally when Julia is up there and having, you know, a bit of a go about something that the Liberal Party has done or said or whatever, normally the Liberal front benchers are sitting there, you know, obviously with their arms crossed or rolling their eyes and with their typical smug looks on their faces. This time they're actually all sitting there going,
oh dear.
We got caught with our hand in the cookie jar. So there's a little bit of that.
I don't know about that description, but certainly there's some restlessness. The body language is such that they've got arms crossed, they're restless in their seats. So let's have a quick listen about some comments that Tony Abbott made, which preceded Julia's speech and talks about his shame comments.
What this Prime Minister has done is shame this Parliament. And should she rise in this place now to try to defend the Speaker, to try to say that she retains confidence in this Speaker, she will shame this Parliament again. And every day the Prime Minister stands in this Parliament to defend this Speaker will be another day of shame for this Parliament, another day of shame for a government which should already have died of shame.
Joy 94.9.
Tony Abbott there speaking before Ms Gillard's very passionate speech in Parliament. Now, during her 15-minute speech, as we're discussing this evening on Gay News Week, she goes through a series of points about where Mr Abbott has made rather misogynistic and sexist remarks. A few examples is if it's true that men have more power than women, is that a bad thing? Mr Abbott says in a magazine interview. Is that such a bad thing? He asks. He poses a question in another interview. What if men are by physiology and temperament more adapted to exercise authority or to issue command? And in response to the lack of females in power in the high office. Sammy, what do you think about that?
I don't know if I really have anything nice to say about that, so I choose to say nothing.
Yeah.
I'm really actually quite surprised that someone still of such old school thinking is in today's society leading a major party, and it does show where a lot of the thinking is coming from in the Liberal Party and why I think they are getting such a politically bad rap because of the way that they're approaching a lot of policies at the moment. And it is typical. They're a conservative party. But does there come a time where being conservative is being too old school?
I think it's important to note that although they may be a conservative party, it doesn't excuse them for being in the past and lagging behind modern day society. And I think a lot of Liberal supporters would agree with me in that point that they need to catch up a little bit with some of their views.
We need to understand that the Liberal Party, of course, is in coalition with the very conservative National Party, and so they can't stray too far from the party line lest they strain that particular arrangement. There's also some senior women in the Liberal Party, particularly the deputy leader of the Liberal Party, Julie Bishop, who has come out, as you might expect, because in defence of the whole situation, you really have to put a woman front and centre, because you can't have a man standing up after all of this saying, no, we weren't being sexist or misogynistic, and that Julia is actually using this to her own political advantage. So they, as you would expect, sent Julie Bishop out to do a doorstop interview to put forward exactly that point of view. So it's not surprising that the Party of Conservatism has this view, but they're talking about Julia being not in a marriage and being barren. These are also features that, whilst I don't like the description, are appropriately used to describe Julie Bishop, who, while married, as I believe, doesn't have children, doesn't have an extended family as such, and so fits a lot of the same categories of misogyny that Tony Abbott describes, but she isn't in a position where she can speak out against him.
Coming from a female point of view, though, the reality is it doesn't matter how you actually sugarcoat what the Liberal Party's views are. As I say, if it walks like a duck, it looks like a duck. You know what I mean? Like, the reality is I don't care how many different, you know, gay, straight, male or female are saying exactly the same thing. It's the same policy.
It is the same policy. Now, so that we've heard Tony Abbott's comments, I think what we should do now is probably go to the next part, which is the final little bit of Julia's comments that we're going to play for you here today.
Can I just say before we play that is the thing that upset me the most about what Tony said and the way that he actually structured his words were he's using the word shame.
And I'll tell you what.
Over and over and over again. And, you know, we'll be discussing about this broadcaster that used, of course, Ellen Jones in about, you know, Julia's father. And I'm disgusted about the fact that he hasn't said it exactly that way.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, all these insults and this word shame has really taken its toll on Julia. Take a listen.
Then, of course, the leader of the opposition comes into this place and says, and I quote, every day the Prime Minister stands in this Parliament to defend this Speaker will be another day of shame for this Parliament, another day of shame for a government which should already have died of shame.
Well, where's that phrase?
Well, can I indicate to the Leader of the Opposition, the government is not dying of shame. My father did not die of shame. What the Leader of the Opposition should be ashamed of is his performance in this Parliament and the sexism he brings with it.
Joy 94.9.
And so Julia Gillard responds to Tony Abbott and in part responds to Tony Abbott attributing through his comments Alan Jones, which made some pretty disgusting comments. And we're going to come to that particular thing in a little while. But she was really very emotional at that point because of the way that these comments had been appropriated and used and repeated when they had been used in such an atrocious way about the unfortunate death of her father, who is not a political figure and so is not subject to the usual political football and tactics. Families, to a certain level, should be outside the fair game with that.
And something to be remembered is those comments by that broadcaster were actually made at a Young Liberals function. So it's part of the political party. It's all kind of linked together when it comes to Tony Abbott. And I don't think he's stepped out and denounced anyone from that gathering at all.
Not only has he not denounced it, there were several members of his front bench, so of the opposition front bench, so the alternate government of this country, who were present at the function and who did not stand up, did not stop the comments being made, did not leave the room as a result of them being said. So they didn't have the gumption or the morals or ethics to actually say, hey, listen, this is not appropriate. This might be a youth function, but to stand up and say, no, this is not on. And I'm a leader in this party. I should stand up and be heard.
The thing is they've also turned around and you know, a couple of days after those comments were actually made by Alan Jones, then the Liberal Party has then come out and gone, you know, maybe he shouldn't have said that at one of our functions and, you know, we didn't know what he was going to say. But, you know, as you said, at the time, nobody had basically the balls to stand up against him and say, well, listen, you know, you are speaking about the leader of our country, regardless of whether we're in opposition or not. It's not an appropriate thing to say.
And the fact that you might think it's okay to say those sorts of things in a closed function that's part of the workings of a political party is pretty offensive, to be fair, because you expect that there'll be robust debate and people should be able to speak freely in those events. But to use that sort of hateful language, I think, falls outside the bounds of what we would expect of people that in this function are future leaders of the country, future leaders of that party, included in the audience are current leaders of that party.
That's right,
and this person who is a broadcaster to not understand that it wasn't a closed function was pretty naive on his behalf.
Very much so. And of course, to do with all this Peter Slipper drama and the text messages between the former staffer James Ashby, there was quite some vulgar language being thrown about, and Ms Gillard talks about them now.
Now, on the conduct of Mr Slipper and on the text messages that are in the public domain, I have seen the press reports of those text messages. I am offended by their content. I'm offended by their content because I am always offended by sexism. I'm offended by their content because I'm always offended by statements that are anti-women. I'm offended by those things in the same way that I have been offended by things that the Leader of the Opposition has said, and no doubt will continue to say in the future, because if this today was an exhibition of his new feminine side, well, I don't think we've got much to look forward to in terms of change conduct. I am offended by those text messages.
Joy 94.9.
It's great to hear that Julia is offended by those text messages, but the thing is, you know, the Liberal Party was having a go at her about basically saying he needs to be made to resign, it needs to happen now. She was basically stating her case that while they are not going to be forcing him to resign and they deny the motion of him being having to resign, it does not mean that she's not offended by the content of the text messages and the content that what was actually happening.
That's right, and we've given a lot of perhaps positive comments about Julia taking on this topic today. I think one aspect of this needs to be that she's offended by sexism, she's offended by misogyny, but she still maintains her opposition to equal marriage in this country. So we need to draw the connection that she's being selective, I guess, about what it is she chooses to be offended about. And at this point, she isn't offended by the fact that there are a group of people that don't have full rights in this country, even though she happens to be offended by sexism and misogyny.
Exactly. And she's made the point that she won't be supporting marriage equality. And this is the thing that is turning around and say, yeah, okay, you have a go at Mr. Abbott for having double standards and talking about how sexism isn't on. But okay, well, why not acknowledge that marriage equality isn't really happening in Australia, and partly a little bit because of you and because of the lack of your support.
The thing is with this too is, you know, she's the way that she will actually gain support throughout Australia is she's made some huge advances and stood up basically, you know, as I said, you know, in the last couple of months, she's seriously grown a pair and given me back the respect of why I wanted, you know, I was looking forward to her being in power, having a woman, you know, in power, a strong woman in power. The other thing is this now has got to the stage where she stood up. Now it's time to make the next step, Julia. Make the next step and agree that all people in Australia need to be equal under Australian law.
Sorry, just had to put that in.
And it's gone around the world a bit. Do you want to chat to us about that, Maddie?
It certainly has. This clip that, and you think parliamentary times, it's a bit dry, it's a bit dull, nobody really cares. But this 15-minute speech has been seen around the world. I was having a look through a few news websites today. The New Yorker has a piece up about it, a fairly in-depth piece in itself. And it's gone around the world. It's making global headlines. And I tell you what, I want to hear what you have to say about it. Send us a text, 0427-JOY-949 or on air at joy.org.au. Let us know what you think about the whole thing. You're listening to Gay Newsweek right here on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
We've had some messages in this evening, Matt.
We certainly have. Mark from Sandringham has sent us a text. We were talking, obviously, about Julia Gillard and her speech in Parliament. And obviously, that links a little bit with our fellow broadcasters up in Sydney. Well, Mark says he doesn't think of shock jocks as broadcasters. He thinks of them as narrowcasters. A rather interesting comment. And thank you very much for your contribution, Mark.
We have live here in the studio with us Brian Shanahan. Brian is running for the position of Lord Mayor of Melbourne in the upcoming Melbourne City Council elections. So welcome to the Joy 94.9 studios, Brian, and thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here.
Now, just getting straight into it, can you tell us a little bit about your history in public life, how you've come to be running for the Lord Mayor, and a little bit about your OAM, so your Order of Australia Medal, that you've been awarded and how that came?
Right. Well, recent history is that in 2004, I was asked to stand for council, which I did, and I was successful. And in 2008, I stood again and again was successful. During that time, I've been chair of the Finance Committee and on the Audit Committee. So I have a background in the council and I felt that I could contribute some more. And I thought it'd be good to go for the top job. I'd done an 8-year apprenticeship, if you like.
So recently, we noticed that you've been awarded an Order of Australia medal. Mm. How did that come about?
It happened in 2011, and it was for services to local government and to the Irish community. I guess it came about because some very kind people put in a submission that I should get it, and in the view of the people that judge these things, they decided that I should too. So I'm honoured and in a lot of ways humbled by it, because no one really does anything by themselves, literally by themselves. They do things with the support of other people. So when you look at all the things that you may have done, when you look very carefully, you find that without the support of other people, you wouldn't have achieved what you did. So, you know, it's nice to have the award, but it's not really mine in the sense of ownership.
Mm. I'd like to move now to the policies and the policies that you've put forward as a running member for Lord Mayor. First of all, transport. Can you tell us what your views are of transport in and around Melbourne, and maybe even speak a little bit about the taxi situation? Because obviously, a lot of people are really passionate about that issue,
yes.
And I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it.
Oh, right. I think firstly, the super taxi stops, if you like to call them that, are successful and a good way to go. They're not a unique initiative of the Lord Mayor, I might say. Not everything that happens in the council is his.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a group, we decided that, and that's a very good idea.
Could you maybe just basically just explain what a super taxi rank is for those that don't know?
It's essentially where there's a safe place that people can go to pick up taxis, where there are sometimes a police presence, but very close to a police presence if there's not one there, where people can have a coffee, a safe area. It's also a good pickup point for people that are in the city having a good time. They can go there and get picked up. They know that they're safe there. And so far, the reports are it's very good. It's also a way of funneling the taxis to a set spot where we know they're going to be.
Mm.
Broadly, transport policy, you have to look at it as a coordinated policy that should be adopted. It basically, it's in the hands of the state government, and council can advocate. What we should be doing is looking at an integrated transport system. The biggest ticket item and the most important is a proper underground rail system. We're probably one of the few countries in the world of our size that doesn't have a proper underground rail system. I was in China recently, and in what they term, I'll be subtle about this, third-tier cities, they've already got significant underground rail systems.
So as far as an underground rail system, do you mean making more stations and making sure they are underground, or moving existing stations and putting them underground?
Oh, no, new stations. Either the Doncaster approach of coming in from Doncaster,
yep,
or the one coming in from the western suburbs. Okay. Either way, it's the most important single piece in any proper transport system. Other things are around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Having been to some of the bigger cities, and I was curious that you chose China because obviously the large cities in China are monolithic. Mm. So to draw us back to cities of similar size, I think actually makes that a clearer link in my mind. Because to compare us with Shanghai, for example, would just not be a comparable thing. Moving to a different area of policy, public safety around the city, particularly over weekends, the use of alcohol and the problems that that brings, and personal safety and CCTV. So all of those things are interlinked. Where do you stand on those basic issues of public safety that, in part at least, do fall within the domain of the council?
Look, the team has a very strong view that we should actually get police back on the beat. The police are a bit reluctant to go on the beat, I might say. The CCTV cameras are very good. I'm not against CCTV cameras. But the problem is we want to prevent acts of violence, and the best preventative measure is having the police around. The danger you have is that you can record, and it's important to do so, crimes, but they're committed and the assailant, it's been done. You've already had your broken jaw, and it's probably small comfort that they catch you did it. Mm. Some comfort, but small comfort. So I think you need to supplement the CCTV cameras with more police on the beat. And to that end, we would advocate that council use its resources to fund extra police on the beat. The state government would, of course, have to agree. But it would be similar to the extra money that the MCC puts in on, say, grand final day or finals day. They pay money towards the police. The VRC pays money. And I'd say Friday and Saturday nights in Melbourne are special events, and council should put some money into ensuring more police are on the beat.
Mm, Friday and Saturday nights are an important thing that I'd like to touch on. Obviously, the current council has trialled a lockout of the I think 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. lockout of nightclubs. What are your views on kind of the alcohol laws and the restrictions around the kind of the city?
Look, I don't think one can be draconian. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a balance. At the moment, we're doing a balancing act between the residents who live in the city and the people that come in to have a good time. Legitimately have a good time. And I think what we have to do is find the right balance. I don't think lockouts are the way to go. I think enforcing the liquor legislation would be a good start to make sure people that are inebriated aren't served alcohol. But I would think there are ways of controlling. Some issues are you could close certain streets at 1 o'clock in the morning to control where the crowds go, and you could have council officers closing these streets, and that also act as early warning systems if there's some trouble.
Okay.
Now, Melbourne City Council has had, of recent years, a long-standing relationship with the GLBTI community, particularly with Joy 94.9, Midsummer Melbourne Queer Film Festival. How do you feel that the council can move forward in this, great relationship, both financial and in other ways?
Well, first of all, I think it's a good relationship, which I have supported. How to move forward? I think we're on the right track. I think it has to be seen as a legitimate and important part of our community. We are a multifaceted community, and we have to all be treated equally. I used to work in multicultural affairs, actually. Mm-hmm. I was in the Institute of Multicultural Affairs, and it's how you can have diversity but also unity. That's the classic. So the city is a unifying factor, but the unity should not impose on diversity. So other people have the right to do whatever they want, provided, of course, obviously if they're not hurting other people or, causing public nuisance and so forth. Everyone has a right to do that, but that shouldn't take away from the unity and the cohesion of the city. It's, again, like one of those balancing things. But I think what's happened over the last 10 years, there's been a change of attitude. I mean, I'm a child of the... I'm 65. I was very happy when I was called middle-aged by the age, actually. Okay, it was the best news I'd had. So I come from a different era, and I would say the inclusiveness that we now have would have been undreamt of 30 years ago.
I wonder, could you? The current Lord Mayor, Robert Doyle, has assured us that if he is re-elected, that Joy 94.9 will stay in Bourke Street here in City Village, where we are right now. Are you willing to put forward your own word that same promise will go forward? Will Joy be able to stay in the City of Melbourne and in Bourke Street at City Village if you are elected?
Let me say, first of all, that I think, I know people get carried away with electioneering, but I couldn't make a blanket promise on that. Without knowing what may be proposed or may happen. I would say I would have no intention of moving you, or if you were to be moved, it would perhaps be to a similar place somewhere else. But for me to say categorically no, I think that's, I'd say personally I have no intention of any such thing. Robert may be able to foresee the future better than me.
All right, so we're going to wind up in a moment. Just in a few words, I know when we were chatting before, you had particular thoughts about some retail aspects that you wanted to raise. Are there one or two points you want to make about that? Particularly, I think you mentioned to me about South Bank and Docklands.
Yes. Look, I'll be brief, I know, of that, and I appreciate getting the time here.
That's really okay.
Firstly, with retail, the anecdotal evidence and the warning signs are that our retail sector is under stress. Mm-hmm. I think we should be proactive and do something about it. We've got a $2 million fighting fund. I think we need to act now, not wait till the stress becomes very serious. The obvious reasons, there's online buying, we're in competition with Chadston and so forth, so we need ways of attracting people, not just to the city, but to spend in the city. Quickly on Docklands and South Bank, I think they're an example. And Docklands are probably a poor urban design to start with, and we're now tinkering with it, trying to improve it. South Bank seems to be, and I'm quite happy to say this, not being particularly worried about political favours, I think both planning ministers have contributed to overdevelopment in Southbank. And as a council, were I to lead a council, I would certainly advocate a strong approach to ministers and vigorous challenging of them.
Brian Shanahan, we just want to thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us here on Gay Newsweek at Joy 94.9, and we wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
We are travelling around the world right now here on Gay Newsweek. We have got a few stories that have caught our eye.
In New Zealand, there has been a trans woman who has pleaded not to be sentenced to a men's prison. Judges have considered moving her from the men's prison in New Zealand. She unfortunately has been charged for hitting a man over the head with a bottle of wine.
Mm, right, okay. And well, that's actually a really good point, that with trans people, which prisons do they go to? Do they go to men's or women's? Obviously, we in the community identify trans people as the gender that they're moving to, but at the same time, it's really interesting under the law whether there's laws across the world that actually kind of specify where how that happens.
And that's right, and she's not really denying the fact that she has actually done the wrong thing. It's more for her safety about where that she's actually going to have to be housed if she's needed to. While we are around the world, there's been a great website, travel website called Expedia. Mm. Now, this website has had a recent campaign backing same-sex marriage and being able to promote great holiday ideas. And unfortunately, they have been targeted for quite a bit of backlash on this.
Mm, of course, the right-wing loons are out at it again on social media.
They are. The video that they've put out, which is on the Facebook page, has received 155 dislikes and has been described by some as disgusting and an abomination, with regular Expedia customers threatening to take their business elsewhere, which, of course, would be their right. But the negative comments came through with some positives, though, with a lot of people supporting the online ad.
With 1.4 million likes on that. Now, around the world today is World Mental Health Day. Mm. Now, World Mental Health Day raises public awareness about mental health issues.
And it certainly is a topic here at Joy 94.9 that we are happy to promote. You've heard the messages on air throughout the last couple of weeks, and we're very happy to support it. The day promotes open discussion of mental disorders and investment in prevention, promotion and treatment services.
And certainly the theme for this year is depression, a global crisis. And it's really important to know that the level of depression and issues of mental health are so prevalent, and they're particularly noticeable within our community. And we know that rates of suicidality are six times greater in our community than in the general community. And this is borne out by the studies from other organisations and other campaigns that we've talked about here on Gay Newsweek on recent weeks. So certainly we strongly support World Mental Health Day, and we support Say No to Homophobia and It Gets Better and all of those sorts of things as a way of promoting mental health.
And also, back overseas now, where we've talked about kind of back home and now back overseas, is in Russia. A social network has done something a little bit fluffy, Sammy. It's about gay partner statuses. It's a bit of a feel-good story.
It's actually quite nice to know that Russia's leading social network, and I'm not going to attempt to pronounce it because I will get it wrong. It's also known as VK.com.
That'll do.
They can actually now list a person as the same sex as their partner under their family situation. Now, this has been, up until now, of course, we know about Russia's great thoughts on our community.
Mm.
It's quite good that such a large social networking in that country is allowing this.
And there are arguably about 150 million users of this site, so it is huge. And we know that in Russia previously they've put bans on pride parades, they've locked up people that have had pro-gay and lesbian community comments expressed. So this level of support in a community, in a country like this, is absolutely pivotal to moving that country's views on our community forward.
And also in June, and speaking of same-sex partners being allowed, in June, Facebook, of course, introduced same-sex marriage status icons as well, one depicting two brides and the other depicting two grooms.
Mm, so cute. I've seen them. They are so cute. Also, while we're staying in Russia, there's been a bit of a problem in the Supreme Court about the dismissal of an appeal against an anti-gay law.
In St. Petersburg, the bans were about propaganda of homosexuality, lesbianism, bisexualism, transgenderism that can damage the health, morale and spiritual development of minors. Now, this offence actually carries a fine of up to 500,000 rubles, which is over 16,000 Australian dollars. So, you know, Russia has, as Jeffrey said, not a great history of late. You know, Madonna faced prosecution for her tour. You know, there's been 73 people prosecuted in the first 4 months under the new law.
And moving right along, our icon of the week position, we had quite a discussion about this, but Sally Field, and we're going to come back about why we remember or don't remember Sally Field in a moment, but Sally Field has been nominated for an award by the Human Rights Campaign. Now, the Human Rights Campaign is an organisation in the United States which, if you haven't seen, have a look at their online presence. They're a really leading organisation in favour of anything about equality in our community, and she's actually won an award, which was presented to her by her youngest child, Sam, who is openly gay, and Sally, who is an Oscar Award winner, wanted to thank the 3,000 men and women in the convention centre for paving a smoother path for her son's life.
She actually won the award that she actually won was Ally for Equality. Now, for someone that's been out in an area that, you know, and growing up in an era that it's actually been illegal to be gay, it's been absolutely fantastic. And I just want to quickly touch on the other young man that also is deserving of this award, of course, is the boxer, who is the world's first out gay boxer. We're talking about Orlando Cruz from Puerto Rico, who came out during the week as well. So we just want to congratulate our recipients of our Icons of the Week here on Gay Newsweek.
You're listening to Gay Newsweek on Joy 94.9.
This has been Gay Newsweek, but unfortunately this is all we have time for tonight. We want to send out a special thank you for Brian Shanahan, running for the Melbourne City Council for Lord Mayor. We will attempt to continue to contact all members of people who are actually running. Next week we'll have very special guests also running, Gary Singer. Big thank you to everyone who joined into the conversation tonight. And a special thank you, as always, to Matt Nock, our technical producer, for pushing our buttons.
Yeah.
If at any time through the week you want to get in touch with us, suggest topics, email us on gaynewsweek@joy.org.au or head to joy.org.au to look at our other media profiles and suggest topics to us.
But until next week, this has been Jeffrey, Sammy and Matt on Gay Newsweek.
Here's news. They say no news is good news, right? But no news means no Gay Newsweek. And that would be bad news. Bad, bad news. So for news you can't refuse, choose Gay News on Joy 94.9. Now there's something for you to muse.
That rhymes.
You've been listening to Gay Newsweek. Check out joy.org.au/gaynewsweek for all of the links on how you can keep up to date with the team on social media. And be sure to tune in next Wednesday from 7 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.